This is Emily Thomas, and you are listening to the Mom Struggling Well podcast. Hey, friends, warmest of welcomes. I am so glad that you've tuned in today for my chat with Elizabeth Oates. She's a wife and a mom to five kids. She, like statistically half of us, grew up in a divorced home. She didn't just walk through one divorce, though. She endured three. Part of her story also includes parents with substance abuse issues, neglectful living situations, and painful rejections by basically all of her dads. On the surface, you may hear this story and assume she's destined for more of the same in her own adult life. But God had other plans. One of my favorite verses in the Bible is in the book of Joel. So a little background on Joel. He wrote to Judah and Jerusalem, calling them to return to God during a time of major calamity in their nation. It is so tempting and so natural to focus on the mess instead of God when we're in a really bad situation. But people in the Bible keep telling us that we need to focus on God, right? So there's probably something to it. So in the case of this book, Judah was up to no good. So God sent the locusts, which was a really bad thing for their crops, and it made for a giant disaster for them. So they were getting basically a natural consequence for being low down, dirty dogs. Hear me though, if you had a childhood where you felt unloved or unsafe, where there was some dysfunction going on with your parents, that was not your fault. Unfortunately, people who are hurting end up hurting other people, and kids don't know enough to know that it's not their fault, so they assume that it is their fault. And that's not true. Anyway, in the book of Joel, he's recounting all the terrible stuff that has gone down, and he encourages the people not to stare at the devastation, but instead to remind themselves what they know to be true about God and his unchanging character. So Joel tells them, return to God. He's gracious, he's merciful, he's slow to anger, and he loves you so much. And then he says something I love in chapter 2, verse 25. This is God talking to them. He says, I will restore to you the years that the swarming locust has eaten. So being a human being basically means that we're going to suffer. Sometimes it's because we've made bad choices. Sometimes it's because other people are making some really bad choices. All of that really doesn't matter because nothing is too jacked up for God to fix. What I love about the way God does stuff is he does not just put a Band-Aid on it or like put another coat of paint on and call it good enough. He straight up restores it. It's back to normal. It's like E.T. when he touches that plant and a dead plant comes to life. God is able to fix all that mess. And you're about to hear that in Elizabeth's story. I just have to pause for a moment and tell you about this week's sponsor, Jelly Telly. Did you know that on average, kids are spending about 5 hours a day on screens? Most of that is shows where God isn't a factor at all. Jelly Telly fixes that. When I watch it with my kids, we end up having really great conversations about it afterwards. It was co-developed by the VeggieTales director, Phil Vischer, so it's got the same depth and humor that VeggieTales has, if you're familiar with that show. It's just another input supporting what you're already telling them, that God is real, God is important, his word is true, and we need to align our lives with what he says because he's the source of wisdom and truth. It's just a really great way to have your kids have fun while they grow in their faith. If you visit jellytelly.com today and use the coupon code MSW in all capitalized letters, MSW, this is just for Mom Struggling Well listeners, and you get your first week for free plus a free Jesus coloring pack, which is like a downloadable coloring book pages for your kids. You can also find the link to it in the show notes for this episode at momstrugglingwell.com. Make sure to check them out. I'm sure you're going to love Jelly Telly as much as we do. Okie dokie, let's jump right into my chat with Elizabeth. Okay, so will you introduce yourself to everybody? Who are you?
Sure. My name is Elizabeth Oates, and I'm married to Brandon. We're college sweethearts. We've been married almost 16 years. I cannot believe it. It'll be 16 years in September.
Okay.
And we have five kids, which is crazy. Never did I think I would have that many kids.
How many did you think you'd have?
Probably two or three.
Okay.
Yeah, I come from two and he comes from two. And so I think I thought two for sure. And then if we were going to get really crazy, we'd have three.
Okay.
But we have five. So we have three biological. And then we have a fourth that we adopted through foster care last year. And now we are fostering her baby brother.
Okay. And so I'm assuming it's open. You have contact with the birth family?
No, actually, it's not open. Well, I mean, it's open in the fact that we know who her birth parents are, but we don't have regular contact with them.
Okay. Yeah. Every order is so different. It's all so different.
It is. We send them letters and pictures a couple times a year, but she won't have contact with them until, you know, she's an adult and she wants to seek them out if she wants to. You know, people ask me, would you let her meet them or, you know, even as a child? And I always say, you know, if they were to maybe get their lives in order somewhat, you know, but for as long as we've known them, as we tell our older children, they don't make wise choices right now. And so we have great empathy for them. I feel like her mom, you know, her mom is very, very young. And, you know, I almost see her as like a daughter, you know, one of my mm-hmm. older daughters. And I have great empathy for her and great love for her. But, you know, she doesn't make wise choices right now. And so for her to have contact with our daughter, it wouldn't be wise and it wouldn't be healthy for our daughters.
Yeah, it's hard to know because you want them to, you don't want to say in any way things that are not kind.
Right.
But you also do want them to know why they aren't at all the birthday parties, you know?
So
Yeah, it is tricky. So I just tell her the story's not over yet, but this is where we're at in the story. And that is why we're doing what we're doing.
For sure. For sure. You know, we prayed for God just to rewrite the legacy for our daughter and to break the cycle of sin and poverty and dysfunction in her life. And he did that. And, you know, we pray the same thing for her baby brother, that he would just do a mighty work in his life and break that same cycle. And so we'll see what happens. And, you know, we pray for their mom too, and they have different dads, but, you know, we pray for their parents just that he would somehow break that cycle. And it's really difficult in foster care. You know, these parents come from generations themselves of
For sure.
Sin and poverty. And yeah, it's very difficult.
It is. And I want to talk about all of that.
I know, we kind of jumped right in.
We did, like, no messing around. But I do also want to ask you, I asked you what your kids are doing that's making you crazy. And you said there's so yes. much tattling going on,
oh,
and your older three
gosh.
love/hate each other.
Yes. I mean, they are. We always say they're frenemies because my older three are each 2 years apart. So they're 11, 9, and 7. And their best friends are arch enemies. They are playing great 1 minute and then they're just about to kill each other the next. And, you know, they've just gotten into tattling lately. And we've started, which we did this when they were younger, you know, when they're in that like age 2, 3, 4, into that like potty talk or sassy talk. Mm. And so we used to spray vinegar in their mouths.
Okay.
And we've gone back to vinegar. I'm like, how are we back here, guys? This is ridiculous, but I can't handle the tattling.
I feel like I say that every time. Like, how many times have we talked about this?
Yes.
And they're like, I don't know, 2? I'm like, no,
no.
1 million, actually.
No. Like 2 in the past 5 minutes, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know why I thought that if I just said it one time and I was clear enough that they would like be done needing parenting, but
I know.
Yes. So vinegar in the mouth, I've never heard of that, but it totally makes sense. I have heard of like, if you're going to be sassy and like use spicy talk, then you can have a little drop of hot sauce in your mouth.
Yes. I've heard that too. But my 2-year-old, like that wouldn't faze her. That girl, she eats hot sauce with a spoon. She'll just like drink it like soup. So I don't think that would
bother.
They're all
so different. My daughter, though, she acts like if she eats anything hot, like you've literally put her on fire. So.
Oh, so it would work for her.
It could work for her. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, oh my gosh. So I have heard also, it probably would only work for little kids, but put a big ear on the wall, like out of construction paper, and just have them go tell the ear. And then they get to say it. And you don't have to hear it.
That is funny. Okay. I haven't tried that one yet, but I might put that in my summer arsenal.
You know, this is what's so weird is what's difficult about it, I think, is you want your kids to come to you with their problems.
Uh-huh.
So how do you know when tattling is just annoying and stop it already? Or, you know what I'm saying? Like, how do you tell?
Well, I kind of tell them, you know, if someone is not like bleeding or dying, then you probably can work it out yourselves. I mean, I really try to get them to work out their problems themselves. I can't really think of a time when they really needed to bring it to me. Because really what they're tattling about is they feel wronged. That's what that's all they're tattling about. They feel like someone wronged them. And I'm like, these are conflict resolution skills that you guys need to work out.
Yeah.
So that's really all they're tattling about.
I'll tell them, okay, did you talk to the other person? And then they'll go and say, you need to stop doing this. And then they're just mean to each other. And then I get involved because I'm like, you need to be nicer. And so I don't know. I feel like I can't get out of involvement.
I know. I give my kids three options. I'm like, when somebody is bothering you, here's your three options. You can try to talk to them. You can walk away. Or you can, if it gets escalated to where there's like crying and yelling and you really can't truly work it out, then you can come to me. Okay. But until that point, like, let's first try to talk. You know, that's your first option. If you can't, just walk away, just go do something different. You don't always have to be together. And then if it gets to the yelling and the crying, because one child in particular gets super frustrated and gets ganged up on, you know, then you can come to me. But that's not quite tattling. That's, I'm feeling anxious, I'm feeling upset, you know, my feelings are out of control, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I try to give them tactics to use, you know, talk, walk away. And if that's not working, then you can bring it to me. But let's try some other things first.
Yeah, my kids also try hitting each other in the face. That's that's their third option. It's so good.
Gosh.
I try to break them of that option.
Yeah.
I also find myself telling them how many square feet are in our house and reminding them that they have permission to go through all of it. And no, they do not have to be on top of each other, annoying each other.
Yes. So true.
Anyway, okay. So I just had to get that out of the way. I was interested in the vinegar thing. Okay, let me just ask, so practically, vinegar, it's just in a squirt bottle. Is it diluted? And do you say, listen, if you come up to me and talk to me about this thing, I'm going to spray vinegar in your mouth? Or do you like spray it at them like a dog?
No. Okay. When the tattling started getting excessive, we kind of said, look, all three of you, the next time one of you tattles, we're going to go back to the vinegar. So
Okay. They'd
had plenty of warnings. They knew it was coming. So the next time someone came and tattled, we already had it in a spray bottle. And it's just like one of those little handheld spray bottles that you would use to like wet your hair with or something.
Yeah.
And we just say, open your mouth, and we spray like two squirts, and we make them close their mouth and hold it for 1 minute. And then they can go rinse their mouth or brush their teeth or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So we don't like spray it in their face like a dog or anything. We just spray it on the tongue like twice, maybe three times, depends on the offense, and then make them hold it for a minute. We set a timer.
Oh, there you go. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Because I think if I did the hot sauce thing, they'd immediately go get a water and I'd
be like... No. If you do the hot sauce, you make them hold it for a minute.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then I'd put on my eggs and just love life, but they would like melt.
We've done soap too. We've made them hold a bar of soap in their mouth for a minute. We set the timer.
Okay. I never tried that.
We're so mean. We're mean parents.
Listen, they act like animals sometimes. Get it together.
And we have five. I mean, we are so outnumbered. We got to keep them in line somehow.
And vinegar is cost effective.
That's right. There you
cheaper
go.
Than jail and bailing them out of jail.
Right.
Okay. So you are passionate about helping women know they can be redeemed from their less than perfect family tree.
Yeah.
And like you were talking about with your adopted kiddos, and that no matter where they come from, God can write a new story in their life.
Yeah.
And I love you have written a book that's coming out soon called Mending Broken Branches. And I love that picture, because a lot of times if you haven't grown up in the Beaver Cleaver family, you do just think it's over for you, like you're broken. And that is not what God says. So part of your history involves lots of divorce, actually. Most of us who are involved with divorce and have that as part of our story, we just have the one, you know, divorce in our in our childhood. But you literally had it in like every stage of your life.
Yeah, unfortunately. So my parents divorced when I was about 2 years old. And then my dad was kind of in and out of my life until I was about 8. And then he just pretty much disappeared from my life. And then my mom remarried when I was in middle school, and she divorced when I was in high school. And then she remarried again when I was in college and divorced when I was in my 20s. So I experienced divorce at three different ages and stages of life.
Yeah. I think a lot of times we think the youngest has the most impact. Is that what you found?
No. I try to tell people, I'm like, it doesn't matter really. Well, I shouldn't say it doesn't matter, but I say, you know, divorce at any age or stage brings different emotions and different baggage into your life. For me, my mom's second divorce was the most difficult. Now, my brother's 4 years older than me. I think her first divorce from our dad was probably the most difficult on him.
Mm-hmm.
But he remembers more. And he, you know, when we would go on visits to my dad, he went more. I didn't really go on many weekend visits. I shouldn't say many, but I didn't go quite as often as he did. So he just he definitely was a little more involved in that experience than I was.
So even a divorce from a stepfather, I guess my assumption would be that that would not be as difficult, but obviously I'm wrong.
Yeah, I know. I think though, I had in my mind that our life would begin when my mom got remarried, and that's when we would really have a real family. Okay. And, you know, my mom dated a lot. And so I watched all these men come and go. And I think I always thought, like, is this one going to be my dad? Is this one going to be my dad? Mm. And so when she finally got married, it was like, oh, finally, now life can begin. Okay. And, you know, there was a lot of talk that he would adopt me. And so I just thought, oh, he's really going to be my dad. And there was a lot of tension in that marriage. And that stepdad, he didn't really like me. And and just as, you know, being a teenage girl, that is such a formative time in your life. Yeah. And, you know, you're just trying to figure out who you are. And looking back, like, I was a really pretty good kid. I didn't drink. I didn't sneak out. Like, I didn't do anything wrong. I made straight A's. I mean, like, I was pretty kind of a vanilla, good, goody, goody kind of kid. Uh-huh. And so I remember thinking, like, I don't understand why he doesn't like me. Yeah. And then it kind of came out when they divorced that, you know, he had two daughters from a previous marriage. And, you know, it was just kind of one of those, I already have two girls, like, I don't need you. And he even made the comment, like, I have no use for you.
He said that to you.
Yeah. So was really, really devastating to me. You know, like I said, my parents divorced when I was so young. So for me, that's just the way it was. And I didn't remember it ever being any different. Mm-hmm. I knew that I didn't like to go to my dad's house. It felt very unsafe. And it was a pretty unsafe environment.
Do you think that it felt unsafe because of, like, your kind of personality? Were you, like, a little anxious, or really was actually unsafe?
It was actually unsafe.
Okay. I think some people who have a history of things being unsafe want to minimize it and say, I'm just a nervous person. It's not them.
No, my dad was an alcoholic and he used drugs. And every time we went, he lived in a different place. There was a lot of neglect when we went to his house. So yeah, it was a pretty unsafe environment. Okay. And even as a young child, I picked up on all of that. And he would leave us for long periods of time when we went. So it was a pretty unsafe environment.
I just want a woman to hear that who wants to say she must just be making it up, because it's not accurate.
Yeah. And as a young child, when, like, days leading up to, because we went every other weekend, and days leading up to our visits, I would have nightmares. I would have stomach aches, diarrhea, and, you know, just, I would be in a ball of knots and very anxious. And so, you know, when you have those symptoms in a young child, you know, 3, 4, 5 year old, you have to pay attention to that. Something is going on that's not right in that home. And, you know, you see those symptoms, you know, we hear about those in foster kids and adoptive kids, that something's going on that they can't verbalize. And so, you know, whatever was going on at his house, I wasn't able to voice, but my body was saying, I'm scared and I don't want to go. And so it was a pretty unstable and unsafe home. And I think that's why when I was around 8, we moved to a different state. And that's when he was just kind of like, I'm done. I don't need to pursue a relationship with my kids anymore. It's too much trouble.
Gosh, that's such a heartbreak. Yeah. I'm so sorry.
Well, you know, I really look at it as God's protection, that he really wasn't a part of our lives. I really do.
Okay, that's good. But gosh, what a void, you know? As you had gotten older and there was a third marriage, what was that like for you? Were you like, okay, we've already done this, you don't have any use for me either? Were you jaded or hopeful or what?
Well, by that time, you know, I was off at college and I had already kind of distanced myself a little bit from my mom. I think being at college, I was just had the mindset of, okay, I'm on my own now and I'm going to forge my own path. And when she told me she was getting married, I just think I was a little jaded, like you said, just kind of like, I've been there, done that, and I don't need a dad anymore. I'm an adult, you know, as I mean, that sounds so silly to say, but I think I just had that mindset of, I'm in college now, I'm independent, I'm an adult, you know, I don't need a dad. And I probably didn't give him as much of a chance as I should have. Yeah. So I really didn't even try to form a relationship with him. Okay. I didn't go home very much on holidays, or never really on weekends and summers. I really didn't go home much. So, yeah, I didn't really have a father-daughter relationship with him. I will say the difficulty in that divorce was just having to walk with my mom through it. And, you know, then as an adult, it's different watching your parents divorce than it is as a child.
For sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So part of your story then is that all of this manifested itself. You kind of coped with all this by achieving. You wanted to, like you said, you didn't understand why your first stepdad didn't like you. Like, what am I missing here? And so you started to do a whole lot of stuff to achieve a lot of things so that people would like you. And that's where you found your self-worth. So how does that affect your parenting?
I feel like I have gotten better as the years have gone on. But mm-hmm. yes, I used to chase a lot of approval in achieving. Mm-hmm. You know, I am a little type A, and, you know, doing the Enneagram has really helped me. So for any listeners who've not researched the Enneagram, it was really helpful. I actually had a counselor tell me, you know, she just spot on. She's like, you're an Enneagram 3. And I'd never even heard of the Enneagram. I didn't know what that was all about.
Where do you find out about it? Because I'm terrible at remembering what I am.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Well, there's a book called The Road Back to You.
Oh, yeah. I think that's what someone it is. Has told me about
yeah.
that. Yes.
So I think that's a good place to start. But I know there's a whole bunch of podcasts all about it. I don't know what the podcasts are called.
Okay.
But the book is a good place to start. But then you can go online. I would just Google maybe Enneagram test.
Okay.
You can go online and take the test and find out what you are.
Why was it helpful to know?
Because my husband and I work a lot with engaged couples and young marrieds. And so we were all about personality tests and the Myers-Briggs. And so when she told me this, I was like, don't throw one more personality test at me. I know myself inside and out.
Okay.
But the Enneagram, it's just a fresh perspective, and it was a new angle.
Okay.
And I don't know, it just gave me a new angle to look at myself and figure out maybe the why behind who I am. The Enneagram 3s were called, I think, maybe like performers or something like that. And because I knew that I was an achiever, but she was saying, like, you know, you want approval, and so you do it through achieving. And we're also people who suppress our feelings. And so it just all made a lot of sense when I looked back at my history. Like, of course I would be an achiever because I've spent my whole life trying to earn love from people through achieving, you know?
Okay.
And so that was just really helpful. So as a mom, I look back when my three older children were very young, and I was trying to be the perfect mom who homemade all my baby food and took my kids to all the right classes, you know, the Mommy and Me gymnastics, and did the play group the right way. And
you had to get in that swimming pool and do the swimming with them. I hated
that. Oh, yes, I did that. It's so dumb. I mean, who are we really there for? And then, you know, dress my kids in the smocked clothing and, you know, all that stuff that, you know, is on Pinterest that says, this is what the good mom does. And mm-hmm. I'm like, Lord, thank you for giving me 5 kids, because now with so many kids, I can't do any of that. I mean, this is like Teacher Appreciation Week this week, and it's day 2 and I've already failed because I've done none of it.
Okay.
I mean, like, I'm just drowning in motherhood, but it's a good thing for me because I can't perform my way into motherhood anymore. I'm thankful for grace every day because I fail so much. All I can do is wake up and love my kids and make sure they're dressed, make sure I have the vinegar handy. And, you know, I mean, I just, I can't do all the things I used to do because there's so many of them.
What was the breaking point when you're like, I am not making their baby food anymore? Like, was it just the amount of kids, or did you have a moment where you're like, this just isn't where it's at?
Probably when we started pursuing foster care and just realizing, that, you know, loving kids, it's not about what we do for them. It's about loving them for who they are.
It's a lot more basic than we make it.
Yeah. Bringing this little girl who came from so much brokenness, and it's like, she doesn't care about a smock dress. She doesn't care about Mommy and Me gymnastics. Like, she just wants to play in the backyard. She just wants to know that she's safe.
Yeah.
She just wants parents who love her and will give her a bath and, you know, make sure she has clean clothes and love her every single day and give her a safe home. So I think that really brought me back to motherhood basics. And and then just the sheer number of, you know, we now have a lot of kids.
It's a lot of kids. Yeah.
Yeah.
You said that you kind of just only do the essential things. And I can really identify with you. I don't even need to take that test. If you're a 3, I'm a 3, I bet. If I stop doing one thing, I'm going to find 3 more things I want to do instead. Uh-huh. And so there are actually moments where I think, I'm not going to do this show anymore because I just want to rest. Like, I just want to read a magazine.
Uh-huh.
But I know, and my husband will look at me like, okay, if God tells you to stop, do it. But don't add that many more. I'm not going to rest. That is not something that I do. I wish it was. But how do you know what essentials to include? Because I want to do it all because I feel like it's all essential. I can reason my way into everything being essential.
Yes. I always say, like, my husband has the spiritual gift of resting. And I always say, like, I'll sleep when I die. Like, yeah. Why? Like, sleeping is a waste of time.
I feel like a failure at the end of the day when I lay down to sleep. I'm like, I just couldn't do it all. And that's so jacked up. I acknowledge that it's jacked up.
Well, my husband and I, you know, we have a family mission statement, and that has helped us kind of stay focused on where we're going to serve together. And then I think knowing kind of what my mission is in ministry, you know, my mission is working with young marrieds and engaged couples. I'm really passionate about foster care and adoption. Someone just emailed me the other day and started talking about a ministry for women who are getting out of prison. And I'm like, that is a great ministry. It sounds awesome. I would love to help get that off the ground, but I know that is not in my wheelhouse. Okay. And so, you know, if things don't fit under the marriage ministry or the foster and adoption care ministry, then I just know I have to say no to it because it doesn't fit under my umbrella.
That's really good.
It's so hard for me to say no. It is so hard. I want to be involved in everything. I'm an extrovert. I am a go-getter. I'm a type A. I'm organized. I'm an achiever. But my husband has helped me so much to say, those are great things, but they're not the best for you.
Yeah, that's good. I like that. And it's good to know what you specifically are doing so you know what you are not doing.
Yeah, just what are you passionate about? What are you called to do? And then just having the strength and the confidence and the obedience to say no. Because, and this is just takes practice, but being okay with saying no and remembering that you don't have to do it all, that somebody else can say yes.
You know, and that's funny. I think that sometimes my issue is not saying no. I'm happy to say no. My issue is I really don't want to say no, not because I'm afraid of them, but because I really, like, I literally do want to do it.
Yes,
because that's
sure.
where I find my identity. Does that make sense? So I know, yes. I know it's wrong.
I know. And I think that's one thing too, like with Enneagram 3s or ESTJs, like the worst thing in the world is that people will think we can't do it. Mm. And that's, I never want people to think that I can't handle it. And, you know, my husband always tells me, he's like, Elizabeth, people know you can do it. You don't have to prove yourself. Mm. And that's so hard for me. But again, with 5 kids, I'm like, I have to just hold all of this together. I cannot worry what people think.
That's good. 5 kids has been really good for you.
It has been so good for me in just letting everything else go and just focusing on my writing and my ministry and my family.
Now, you said that at one point, though, ended up with you having a period of depression.
Yes.
Where are you at with that today? And how did you see your way out of it?
Well, today, fortunately, I'm great, but that's because of modern medicine. I dealt with it a little bit after my 3rd child, you know, just a little bit of postpartum, but I have a great doctor and he gave me some happy pills, as I like to call them. And then everything, you know, life went on and everything was great. And then after a few years, I was like, you know, life is good. Nothing's going on. So I think I can get off of these. Well, then we brought in our foster daughter and, you know, she was a baby. And I don't know if it was just having a baby again that triggered it or I think that was part of it. I think I felt very isolated and lonely because once again, I was now at home with a baby and a newborn. I think, you know, my writing wasn't where I wanted it to be. I started feeling like a failure, and for my personality type, feeling like a failure is not a good thing.
Yeah.
And so I think that was part of it. I think financially our family wasn't doing very well. And so there was a lot of anxiety that was happening there. It was the perfect storm of a lot of different things. And I started going to counseling and my counselor, she said, all of these things sort of triggered some childhood trauma, which I thought was interesting because I was like, I did not experience any childhood trauma. Like, you know, nothing major happened. And she said, Elizabeth, you know, cause I'd been to her before and she was like, Elizabeth, let's talk about everything you've experienced. And she's like, that is called trauma. And that was really huge for me to use that word. I just never saw what I'd been through as trauma. And I was like, oh, I've just been through a few divorces. And she said, but it's everything attached to those divorces, you know, that is traumatic. And I think everything that I'd been dealing with, it triggered a lot of feelings. Like I said, Enneagram 3s, we suppress our feelings and it triggered all of that. And so, yeah, so it just brought on a lot of depression. And how I got out of it was a lot of prayer by a lot of my friends. My husband was really patient with me. I ended up having to get back on medication, still going to counseling, and it was a very slow, slow process.
Was it harder to be on medication the second time with your personality feeling like I thought we had sorted this out?
Yes, for sure. Again, because my personality is all about achievement and success. And I felt like such a failure. And even though, like, I've talked to women about this so many times, I've always said, like, there's nothing to feel failure about.
It's, as long as it's them and not you.
Exactly. As long as, yeah, exactly. As long as you're the one on the pill, not me. Yeah. But it's like my head knows, intellectually, I know there's nothing wrong with it. But my heart was really struggling. And I felt like I should not be dealing with this. I'm stronger than this. And again, that's the Lord breaking me and telling me, you're not stronger than this. You're not strong at all. You're weak. Because, you know, what does he say? When I am weak, then I am strong. And yeah. He needs me to be weak so that I can depend on him. And honestly, so I can depend on other people, because I need to depend on my husband, because there's so many times I try to function without him. Yeah. And I need to depend on my friends, because I sometimes try to be too strong and I try to push them away. And, you know, my friends are so, so patient with me. And, you know, they just, no matter how many times I try to push them away, they wait for me. They come alongside me. I mean, they're just the greatest. So they just really helped me through it. And just my friends and my husband. And yeah, it was a really dark time, but they were all just so great in helping me walk through that.
Okay. So for somebody who doesn't have those kind of relationships, what would be something that you would encourage them to do to have a friend like that?
Well, first of all, I would say, please don't be stubborn like me. There is no shame. And, you know, our heads know it, but our hearts don't. There's no shame in walking through depression. I read a statistic. I think it's something like 50 million people deal with it. Hmm. So you're not the only one. There are 50 million other people dealing with it.
Yeah.
And so surely we know someone else dealing with it. I would say start with your doctor. You know, I remember calling my doctor right after my third born, and I was just in tears. And he said, Elizabeth, I know a lot of doctors make women take a test or fill out questionnaires, but I say, if you think something's wrong, something's wrong. And he just called my pharmacy that day. I didn't have to go into the office. I didn't have to do anything.
Oh, that's so good.
Oh my gosh, such a compassionate man. And so I would say start with your doctor. You could start with a counselor. You know, if you're looking for someone to walk with you, call your church. I guarantee you there is a woman who can walk with you. Tell someone what's going on, whether it's a pastor or someone on staff, and just say, I need a woman to walk through this with me. Mm-hmm. And they will know of someone who has been there before and they can walk with you.
Yeah, that's good. So for a mom who is interested in possibly fostering, I know that that's a passion of yours. We were foster parents, but foster to adopt, and we couldn't have kids. So people think we're like super amazing, but we really just wanted kids. It wasn't, you know what I mean? It wasn't as altruistic as it seems. But for someone who is like interested in taking that leap, but they don't know if their family can handle it, like where would you say for them to start?
Well, I would say start by praying. I mean, obviously that was one of our fears too, of, oh my goodness, what kind of child are we going to get? Are we going to be able to handle it? And we just prayed, Lord, bring us the child that is the right fit for our family. Mm-hmm. And we felt like that prayer would cover any issues this child might have, because they tell us, you know, these children are going to come addicted to drugs, or they're going to come with some sort of emotional trauma, or they're going to come with something, because they come from the foster care system, which means they were removed from their parents. And you can't be removed from your parents without suffering some sort of trauma.
Yeah.
And so we, of course, were nervous about that too.
Says the girl, by the way, who had lots of dads in and out and thought she wasn't traumatized.
That's right. Exactly.
You've come so far.
Exactly. So I would say start by praying, you know, pray that God would bring you the child that fits well in your family. And then I would say talk to different agencies in your area about the process for getting certified. I would say start by babysitting. You can get certified to babysit. I know the agency we use, there's two levels. You can get certified to babysit for up to 8 hours. And then you can also get respite certified, which means you can keep children, I think it's for up to 2 weeks. So if a family were to go out of town for the weekend or go out of town for a week or two on vacation, you could keep their children. And that's a great way to kind of get your feet wet and just get some experience with foster kids.
That's great. Okay, so with your book that's coming out, Mending Broken Branches,
yes.
How is that book? There's so many books, Elizabeth, and I'm sure your book is great. But tell us why that book is going to be helpful for the woman who feels kind of broken beyond repair.
Sure.
Especially when she looks around and does see all the kids in smocked outfits and the moms who are making their baby food. And she knows she is not She's not even got it together where it looks like that. Or maybe right. maybe it looks like that, but she knows it's a complete sham.
Sure. Oh, my goodness. Okay. So mending broken branches, it's for women like me who come from dysfunctional families. And dysfunctional can mean anything like abandonment, abuse, divorce, addiction. It can be extreme like that. Or it can just be maybe you come from a family where you didn't feel like you measured up to your parents' expectations. Maybe your parents were overly critical, something like that. So it covers a wide spectrum. So if you come from a dysfunctional family and now maybe you're engaged or married and you want to create a healthier, godly family of your own or marriage of your own. And so this book provides equipping and encouragement to teach you how to do that. It's a book that I really wish I had had when I was engaged or newly married. People always ask me, how did you turn out so normal? Or, how have you had this solid marriage? And, I always say, well, first of all, it's by the grace of God, it is nothing I've done on my own. But second of all, God has been so gracious in giving me a lot of mentor couples, Sunday school teachers, people like that in my life that I have just studied either up close or from afar. And I've watched, I've read a lot of books. And so I think we glean wisdom from other people and other marriages. And this book, it's just a tool like that where there's women in the book that have given kind of their little snippets of wisdom or their experiences from growing up in dysfunctional families. So we're kind of all learning from each other. And it gives practical tools on what they can do to overcome their past and then to build a healthier future.
I love that. That's so, so good. It's really important. Okay, so we're almost out of time. So I wanted to ask you though, what can you not stop talking about?
Oh my gosh. So I'm not super brand loyal on much. Like I'm a bargain shopper. Okay. So I usually go for the lower price. But for about 20 years, I used a really expensive mascara.
That's a lot of loyalty for a long time.
I know. It was like the one thing that I always bought. But over the past like year, I've gotten a bunch of styes just like in one eye. And it's frustrating because, you're supposed to throw away your mascara. But I'm pretty cheap and I wouldn't throw it away because it is so expensive. So finally, I was like, this is ridiculous. I'm going to have to just throw it away. I'm going to have to buy a cheaper mascara because I can't keep getting these styes.
Okay.
So I have found a like $5 mascara that I love. It is just as good as the expensive brand. And I'm sure everyone listening is like, yeah, I've been using it since I was 14. But it's the L'Oreal Voluminous Original.
Okay.
I love it. Do you use it?
No, I kind of use an expensive one. And then sometimes sometimes I just use a sample.
Okay. I'm telling you.
I'll switch over once I'm done with this little what I have left.
Here's what you can do. Go get it and just use it on days when you're like, I'm not even going to see people. I'm just going to run errands or whatever. And just see if you like it on those days and save your expensive stuff for like date night or something.
I don't necessarily like it more. It's just what I currently have. So okay. I think, I'm down for trying that.
It's really good. L'Oreal Voluminous Original.
So good.
So good. I love it. I'll never switch back.
See, now you're brand loyal to this.
Yeah, exactly.
So good. Well, thank you so much, Elizabeth, for sharing your heart and for the ministry you have to marriages and women. It's so important. And when does your book come out?
October 24th. And you can pre-order it right now on Amazon.
Okay, awesome. Well, I will check into that. Thank you so much.
Yes, thanks for having me.
I hope that talk gave you some hope if your background was a rough one. So many people who come from really hard places want to downplay the effects of that environment and those experiences. While it's not healthy to blame everything on our parents, obviously, now that we're parents, we realize it is stinking hard and we are doing the best we can. Just yesterday, my daughter said, I know you're going to mess me up. I said, what is that supposed to mean? She said, you have never been a parent before. You're trying out all kinds of new stuff on me. So getting strong votes of confidence from my oldest girl. It feels so good. It is healthy, though, to value yourself enough to take an objective look at the hard places in your childhood, if you have them, and to consider how they might currently play into your concept of God, your concept of yourself, or your concept of family. Like it or not, the people we spend time around have a really big impact on who we become, and likewise, you are making a huge impact on your little ones, so it's really important that you get healthy. It is never too late. Don't believe that it is. That's not true. So what will your strategy be to Struggle Well this week. Maybe you sit down and write a family mission statement with your husband, just to keep you focused on the main things. If you're like Elizabeth and I, we can sometimes get our identity from accomplishments. So if we're not intentional about what we say yes to, we end up signing up for everything, and then you're missing time with your family, and you're a monster of a mom because you're so stressed out. So don't do that. Make a mission statement. Maybe you could identify with part of Elizabeth's story and you could pre-order her book. I have it linked in the show notes for you at momstrugglingwell.com. Maybe, like Elizabeth, you have also experienced the sting of rejection. I would really challenge you to march right into God's presence. The Bible says that we can come boldly to his throne of grace. So ask him boldly, what are his thoughts on the situation where you feel like you were rejected? Don't let shame make you want to hide from him. You are a daughter, a really loved daughter. So make the trade of those feelings of rejection for the truth of who God has made you to be. Talk to him about it. I promise he'll show up. Maybe you could identify with Elizabeth and I's blinding fear of failure. Something I'm doing to actively combat that in my own life is doing things that I know I'm not good at or that make me feel really dumb. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to the latest Problem Solved episode, but I failed on that one several times and it was so good for me. Guess what? I didn't die. Isn't that great? Messing up is not the end of the world, and we sometimes think that it is. Embrace your weakness. It drives you to God, which is the perfect place to be, and it makes you experience the beauty of relationships with other people that are real. You know, if we do not need other people, or we think we don't, or we don't let them help us, it really stunts the authenticity that can happen between us and other people. Maybe you loved what she said about being foster parent, and you could dip your toe in the water of foster parenting by becoming certified to babysit foster kids. So whatever you decide to do, I hope that you get real intentional this week about struggling well in some way. Go ahead and find us at Instagram on Wednesday night for Struggle Well Wednesday, when we talk about how are things going. It's a great group of girls that gets together every Wednesday night and just encourages one another. I love it. This week, before you go to Amazon and buy all the things, it would really help me in covering the cost of this show if you would go to momstrugglingwell.com/Amazon, or you can also find the Amazon link in my Instagram profile, and then just make your purchases as usual, and Amazon gives me a tiny bit of the purchase, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. All right, ladies, let's get to it. Got a whole week ahead of us. It's going to be hard sometimes, but it's going to be great. We just got to stay present, realize it doesn't have to be perfect, which is good because it's not going to be. I look forward to hearing how it's going on Wednesday. Have a great week of struggling well.